So my name's Matt. Hi. I blog at keepingitclassless.net. Data center network engineer by trade, general geek by night, things like that. Today we're going to talk about some pretty cool stuff, but before we get into all of that, I'd like to offer a brief discussion about what I usually like these things to go as. First of all, discussions like this are kind of cool because this is real low key and so on and so forth, but I normally hate keynotes. And the reason for that is because they're not discussion oriented. You know, you got a guy up here talking and saying this is how it is, there's no discussion. So I'm probably going to leave a slightly larger amount of time at the end for discussion if you guys have any questions. I do this kind of stuff for a living, but this is a very, very rapidly evolving technology, so none of this is really set in stone yet. It's mostly up to people like you and I to kind of just talk about it out, and get the details straightened out. The other point I wanted to make is I literally just got off a plane. I was in San Jose yesterday, and I took the red eye, so I am exhausted. If I start babbling, please come up here and smack me, because I need it. Let's talk real quick about, I'm curious who in here, raise your hand if you consider yourself network savvy. I mean, generally speaking. Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, this not professionally. I mean, it's not necessarily, you do it for a living, but if you've tinkered with a switch or a router before, we will stick as closely as we can to the fundamentals. There's going to be a little bit of technical here, but like I said, this is a discussion. If you guys need me to stop and explain something in more detail, please do that, because that's ultimately how we're going to get this, knocked out. This is very new technology. I'm not an expert. Nobody really is. People are just now inventing it, so it's kind of hard to call yourself an expert. So please, if at any point in the presentation you'd like some clarification before I move on, don't hesitate to stop me. So from an overview perspective, we're going to talk about a few things. The first off is if you've heard of software-defined networking. Well, how about this? Raise your hand if you've heard of software-defined networking. Excellent. Sweet. So I'm not starting from scratch. That's awesome. We've come across this paradigm in networking where we've done things a certain way for a long time. I mean, a really long time. And we're not really used to changing the model when it comes to networking, because networking is pretty critical to our applications, right? I mean, that's where everything connects. Storage connects to the network. The network itself connects to the network in many ways. The applications rely on the network to get from point A to point B. So change is not a word that we like to talk about in networking. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons why this conversation is so, I mean, it is controversial. If you've heard of software-defined networking, undoubtedly you know that. There's a lot of discussions happening right now for just that very reason. No, you can't do it this way because X will happen. I mean, there's tons of that. So that's kind of why I wanted this to be a lot more discussion oriented, because that's where the value comes in the discussion about this kind of technology. So I'll kind of go over what I believe SDN is, some examples of SDN. I will try to explain how SDN solves our networking problems, and maybe some of how it will solve our networking problems in the future. And then finally, of course, what the open source community is doing about SDN, because that's why we're all here. Okay, it looks like the slides are a little delayed. So a theoretical person who you'll see in a second. Fred is his name. He works for Acme Corp, okay? Corporation that does some sort of a product. They sell a newer, better car, for instance. Now they have a data center because they have to host their application somewhere, right? They have a campus network because they have users. Users have to plug in somewhere. So Fred, what he does is he sits in his cubicle and he says, I need to keep this thing running. This is a network. It's crucial. I have to keep this thing running. So that is his prime directive. On the other hand, users come to him daily for things like such and such isn't working, or my port is not working, or various move, add, change kind of things. So he is busy doing that stuff. Users come to him every day. The CTO is or CIO is in his office saying, hey, you need to get this stuff spun up really quick. You need to get network changes made. And now I'm not even talking about future stuff. I'm just talking about operations, operating the current network. So he's busy doing that. And that's a problem for Fred, because Fred has thought about this sweet network design that's going to improve ROI by 5% or something like that. And he really wants to do it because it involves the technology of the day. And he can't get to it. He's busy doing move, add, changes. He's busy doing the laborious, tedious work. So that's Fred. Coming up soon is Jen. So Jen is a little different. She also works for Acme Corp. And Jen is more of a server person. She likes to work with servers. So she sits in her cubicle, and she does things like spin up applications. So somebody needs a new DNS server spun up at some remote office for increased reliability, things like that. She's responsible for doing that. If somebody needs a new application, like a MySQL instance spun up to get the company's new web application off the ground, that's all her. Now the cool thing about Jen is she's living in the modern times. She's in the 21st century. I mean, it's 2013, right? Who here hasn't heard of server virtualization? I hope none of you.
I hope she's not using
that equipment too. Yeah, thank you for catching. So she's on the ball. Needless to say, she knows what she's doing. She's got all kinds of sweet virtualization products up and running. She's scripted the living daylights out of it. Every single workflow from A to C is automated. So when somebody says, "Hey Jen, I need you to spin up an application," it's done. Everybody see the show MASH? So she's like radar. It just happens because that's the way that virtualization has enabled us to work in a data center. Virtualization has done that for us. The problem with what Jen does on a day-to-day basis is she is almost always waiting on Fred. And the reason for that is Fred is busy doing tedious move-ahead change work. And in fact, some of the stuff that Jen wants Fred to do is move-ahead change work, if you really think about it. I'll give you an example. New MySQL instance, or maybe a MySQL and web server instance, needs to be spun up in some location. Well, typically in a data center, especially a cloud-type data center, there's firewalls, there's routers, there's access rules. It's not a simple matter of plugging in ports. There's rules and policies that need to be changed. And by the way, networking doesn't like change, remember? That's a problem. So now we have to figure out how to put into place these changes to enable the applications to work while keeping the other applications working. I've just described to you change control. And if you've used it, you know how annoying it can be. So that's kind of what we're running into at Acme Corp. We have this issue of server team versus network team, and the network team isn't necessarily lazy. I mean, they're just overworked and maybe working with the wrong tools. Think of it. If you have a large environment like Acme Corp, you've got 50 switches maybe in a given data center. What are you going to do? Console into every single one of them, or SSH into every single one of them, and change an access list? Guess what? That's what we have to do today, for the most part. That's just an example. I mean, there's different architectures behind everything. And of course, there are some environments that are much more simple than others. And that's kind of where we get into the murky waters of how you exactly define this. But believe it or not, this is a problem for a lot of companies. So what is SDN? If you remember, 7, 8, maybe even 9 years back, the term cloud started becoming popular. When you first heard the term cloud, was it defined to you a la dictionary? Probably not. I don't think anybody really knew what cloud was at the time. In fact, one of the biggest problems at that time was that everybody was calling their product cloud, which was not helpful. So we're having the same problem with software-defined networking. I don't want to call out vendor names. I think you can all probably do the homework for yourself. You come across a marketing pamphlet that says, "New SDN product, sweet, buy it from us." And they don't define what it is. I've seen this probably 10 times in the past month. A vendor comes out and says, "I'm giving you a software-defined networking product because you asked for it, and here's what it is," when it ends up being a software router. So is that SDN? I mean, is a software router SDN? Because that's the problem. We're coming across these new ideas that we're all talking about, but then the vendors are slapping labels on it and calling it what we want. So the discussion has to be aimed at, is that truly SDN? Might be. I mean, that's kind of the discussion. So Martin Casado, he works for VMware right now. If you've known him, he went to Stanford University. Brilliant, brilliant guy. Probably one of the leaders in networking right now, if not of all time. Now he specializes in virtual networking, but the dude is just brilliant. And we're going to talk about one of the things that he helped create, something called OpenFlow. And at, I believe it was VMworld last year, he was quoted saying, "SDN has just come to mean something cool in networking." And the first part of that quote is, SDN to him essentially meant OpenFlow, and OpenFlow we'll get to, but essentially that was just one instance of it because that was his baby, and that was kind of when SDN sort of got off the ground. So he makes a good point. I mean, it, there's a lot of cool stuff going on in networking, but is that SDN? You know what I mean? Is this particular product that this vendor is telling me about software-defined networking? So here are some of the things that I've seen labeled as SDN. An API, right? You got a router. You need to change an access list. What do? You SSH into it. You get into the access list and make a permit statement, or several. With an API, you can script that. So Perl, woohoo! You still do it on a one-off basis. And that's a problem because A, it doesn't get us any more scalable. We still have to use script against one router at a time. Okay, you could put multiple IP addresses in the script, I understand that, but it's not making us holistic. It's still a siloed view. Those routers don't know anything beyond what those protocols between the routers tell each other. So you're not changing the game. You're not altering any sort of paradigm. You're just slapping an API on top. Now I will say, hugely useful. And if a vendor is doing an API like that correctly, hold on to them. Now virtual appliances is another interesting thing. I can't remember what year it was. It was 2008, I believe it was. A company called Viata. Who here has used Viata? Okay, so few of you. If you haven't, please check it out. Viata is a great product. They were recently purchased by Brocade, which is not the most open source company in the world. But the community version of Viata is still out there. They're still maintaining it, to my knowledge. It's a great open source software router. Now, what I mean by that is it's essentially the equivalent to a hardware router, except that you can run it in a hypervisor. So now you can do cool stuff like plug in a virtual machine, put it in one subnet, connect it directly to a virtual router, and then have that virtual router do firewalling, routing, things of that nature, without having to hairpin up to like some sort of a top of rack switch, or, which is usually the case, the firewall at the end of the row, latency, things like that. So that's a pretty good use case. But is that SDN? Going back to the API argument, the scripts that manipulate those APIs to do stuff, is that SDN? These are the kind of things that we're having to deal with in the community. This discussion about which is not, which is SDN, things like that, that's what we're talking about. So SDN to me, and I don't want to call it opinion-based. It is sort of kind of my opinion, but I'm more interested in just sharing with you what I've seen. SDN commonly involves some sort of control plane abstraction, and I'm going to define that later. But typically, that's what it involves. We're going to talk about the three planes of networking, and we're going to talk about how abstraction solves a few problems and what it gets us. But like I said, SDN typically involves some sort of a control plane abstraction. Now, I will say SDN can be completely closed source. I would consider a product SDN if it was completely hidden to me and, you know, not shared because of the problem that it solves. Now, would I prefer an open source solution? Of course. But I don't think that that's really the discussion. There's a lot of ways that actually open source has influenced this SDN hype tsunami that's come at us in ways that are hugely beneficial. In fact, I think a lot of the leading SDN solutions are going to include a hybrid of closed source and open source because of the fact that the vendors are now using open source products, essentially, open source projects in their products, which is really, really interesting. So the third bullet point is the use case. What does SDN do? And I think what SDN does is what defines SDN, and that is answering this problem of network agility. Not having Fred be a bottleneck to the network anymore, not having Fred having to go through a list of trouble tickets. Okay, sweet, you need an application spun up, cool. Well, you're spinning it up in this cloud stack instance, and now that API ties into my Open Daylight instance that pushes all the flows down to the necessary network elements, and meanwhile, I'm on a beach in Maui. That's essentially what that does. So that's unicorn and rainbow land. We're not gonna get there in the next year or two, but that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. So, from a physical network perspective, I apologize for the delay, it'll come up shortly. When you're talking about a data center, especially a virtualized one, you have the concept of a hypervisor. You all know what a hypervisor is. The physical network is what connects the hypervisors together, allows the VMs to talk, to other physical elements, maybe a router, maybe a firewall, maybe a, you know, bare metal workload, things of that nature. And in every single hypervisor, we need to connect our virtual machines to the physical network. And in the past, this was really, really simple. I mean, think of it just essentially connecting each VM to the Linux bridge and bridging the packets up into the physical network. Not hard to do, not at all. Layer 2 forwarding decisions are actually pretty easy these days. The problem on the physical network is that you have to deal with things like spanning tree, which prevents loops in your network, which also, by the way, blocks part of your very expensive bandwidth. And spanning tree in a data center is a no-no. So this is what a typical hypervisor implementation looks like from a networking perspective. You've got your management plane. who in here has used ESXi? So you, oh, perfect. So you guys know what I'm talking about. You get into ESXi, you configure a vSwitch. So if you need some sort of a VM access, you connect the VMs there. If you have a separate NIC, and maybe you want a separate subnet for those to be in, and you don't want the you don't want this traffic going out one NIC and then out another NIC, so you don't want to load balance them essentially, you'd have to create another vSwitch. What you've done there is you've used the management plane to make that configuration. But what if you want to do the same thing on another host? You have to get into that other host with the vSphere client. This is nothing new. So the management plane here is not centralized. Okay in small environments. I would actually be okay with it for two hosts. But try 100. It will not be fun. So the next step, and this is where we get into the concept of abstraction. We can abstract these layers one at a time. If we talk about the management layer, what are we doing? These are things like SSH, technically SNMP. There are, JSON APIs. Those are all part of the management plane because what they're doing is they're allowing you as the administrator to say, I want to make X change. That's part of the management plane. With a concept like the virtual distributed switch in VMware, and there we're going to get to the open source vSwitch, which is a really cool project, by the way. If you haven't seen it, check it out. And by the way, these images, if you I'm going to hand out cards at the end. These images, I made these. They're on my blog. Feel free to download them. Just keep in mind, where they were. The virtual distributed switch allows us to abstract that management plane and essentially centralize it. So what we're doing is we're keeping the control and intelligence local to each vSwitch, but we're managing them all through a central pane of glass. So that saves us a lot of time. What it doesn't do for us is integrate with the physical network. So yeah, we can add a VLAN on all of our hosts all at once. Does that mean we can also add the necessary VLAN to the physical network? How about the access lists? How about the firewall rules? What does that do for us? No product does that right now, at least not that product. So we get to the third element, and this gets us to the concept of a controller. And I'm going to refer to it as an SDN controller, but call it whatever you want. Now, a controller takes it a step further, because you've already centralized the management plane. There's no more centralization to do there. You're already in the single pane of glass, whatever it is. Now we get to centralize the control plane. Anyone want to guess what an example of a control plane protocol would be in networking? How about OSPF? EIGRP if you're using Cisco. RIP. We've all heard of RIP. Good old RIP. These are all control plane protocols. The reason for that is they instruct the network how to work. Does OSPF move packets from one side of a network to another? No. But what they do is it allows the routers to kind of agree on a topology that the network basically is configured to be, and that allows you to move packets from end to end. But the control plane is what makes those forwarding decisions, just not the forwarding itself. So what we've done now is we've taken the data plane and we've left it on each networking device, physical or virtual. Each of those networking devices are configured to look to the SDN controller for forwarding decisions. I mean, from a packet-to-packet basis. Meaning, I have a packet, I don't know where to send it, tell me what to do. Think of routing on a common router today. How is routing performed? You look at the IP address in the packet, namely the destination IP address, you match it against an IP routing table. Oh, I have a match, sweet. I'm gonna forward it according to the rules that are in the routing table. That's the data plane. The control plane is something like OSPF that sticks the routes in there in the first place, right? So we can actually get into some really cool stuff if we centralize that component. We'll keep something like the routing table local to the forwarding device, because ultimately there has to be something there or it won't be very scalable, right? But what it gains us is we now have the ability to make really, really, really detailed forwarding decisions. Forget just layer 3. Forget just layer 2. We can now forward based on pretty much anything we want. And the reason for that is because we've centralized that control plane. Now, there aren't very many technologies that will do this today. There is one. It's called OpenFlow. And I'm going to talk about OpenFlow here in a little bit. Who here has heard of OpenFlow? Awesome. You guys are awesome. Okay, so SDN, sort of a recap on what we just talked about. How does SDN solve this problem of network agility? You could probably say that what we're doing is we're dumbing down our infrastructure, but we're making it smarter in the process. We're centralizing the intelligence rather than just simply centralizing some sort of an API. We're doing much more than that. And the cool thing that we can do with that, if we're breaking it down to such a low level, we can now make really cool forwarding decisions instantly instead of a script that simply makes a command change on every single device. So now we have a holistic view of our data center. The other cool thing that I would like to mention is if you've broken it down to such a basic element called flows, if you break it down to such a basic element, you can make forwarding decisions on devices other than just simply a physical device or a virtual device, right? You can orchestrate apps on top of this. So an app gets instantiated in OpenStack. OpenStack calls Neutron. Now it's called Neutron. And these things happen in real time because the tenant said, I need a new instance. And the APIs reach down into that flow table and say, I need to make a change. Tenant just got spun up. He needs his app to work right now. That's the kind of stuff that we're allowed to do. I do want to take a short segue into network virtualization. This is just strictly my opinion, quite frankly. Network virtualization versus SDN, if there is a versus. I don't believe network virtualization is the same as SDN. I believe that the argument could be made kind of either way, that SDN is a subset of network virtualization, or even vice versa, to be honest. It really depends on how you define the two. I'm offering up, just for the sake of my own opinion, just so you guys know, and feel free to talk with me about this afterwards, but network virtualization to me is more about agility. Network virtualization to me is more about simplifying your network and then overlaying some sort of virtual fabric on top of it. So whenever you talk to a guy like Martin Casado from VMware, VMware just recently announced their NSX product, based, by the way, very strongly on Open vSwitch, which is really cool. And network virtualization allows you to basically do the same thing with your network that we're now able to do with our servers. How hard is it to spin up a server these days with virtualization? The answer is not. It's not hard. So how come it's still that hard? The same difficulty that it took for us to spin up physical workloads, we're still doing with networking. That's what network virtualization allows us to do. You simplify the physical network. Not dumb it down, you're not making it irrelevant, you're actually making it more important in many ways. But what you're doing is you're allowing yourself the framework to build more intelligence on top of it in a multi-tenant, agile, programmable way. Now the programmable piece is SDN to me. The idea of making that happen or making forwarding decisions on the hypervisors or in the physical network to make that network virtualization work, that to me is SDN. There's many mechanisms behind that. But that's an important distinction that I'd like to make. So think about that. I guess I won't belabor the point here, but there's something I'd also like to mention. There's been a lot of talk in the industry, especially regarding network virtualization, but SDN as well, about silos. And I've started many of those conversations. I guess the reason that I start conversations like that is because you've got Fred and you've got Jen. Now, Fred is the head of networking and Jen is the head of the server department. You'd be surprised how many environments there are where the server team and the network team have massive hatred for each other. I mean, they can't even look at each other in the eye because they're always getting in each other's way. I mean, you would hate that too, wouldn't you? I mean, and these companies have operated like that for so long. Those server guys don't know what they're doing because we're the network team and we're important. Okay, you guys are important, great. The server team does the same thing. We host the apps. Those network guys are always, you know, messing around with the network and taking down our applications or not doing it in a timely fashion, not making changes for us in a timely fashion. This hostility is out there. And one of the things that I think SDN has the capability to do, won't do it by default, can't just plug it in and make life pretty. You have the ability now to bridge those two silos, right? Because now the networking control plane and management plane is part of the server infrastructure. It really has to be, quite frankly. To get the agility we're talking about, it really has to be. So if you consider for a second these companies that have these silos, and hostility doesn't have to be a part of it. It could be as simple as we don't talk to each other. That's probably the more common instance. But both are pretty harmful because if you're not working together from a server and network perspective, you're only slowing down your own organization. So this kind of technology is an enablement to get rid of those silos. I built in the next slide because I wanted to talk just real briefly about kind of the three planes that we talked about, but more of a data center overview. The data plane, as I mentioned before, is strictly the workhorse of the network. Packets in, packets out, right? There's a table, tells you how to forward packets. It makes that happen in hardware or software, as the case may be. The control plane. Control plane would be like the horseman, steering the horse and, you know, telling it which way to go. Bad analogy. I'm going to stop with the horse analogy. But you get it. It's more of a decision making without intelligence. Think of a captain in the military. He ultimately has a lot of control, but he still has to follow the orders of his superiors. So he maintains battlefield focus and says, you need to go here, you need to go here. The general behind him is saying, you need to take that hill. Sort of the paradigm there. The third plane that we really didn't talk about, I guess this could be considered really the management plane, is orchestration and automation. Now, I would submit that those two are not the same thing. To me, automation is something that I'm sure most of you are familiar with. Automation is, I have 5 routers, they all need to get the same command, so I'm gonna script that. Very valuable. And that's automation. Orchestration to me is more of what you would expect in like a public cloud, where you sign up as a tenant, you say, I need a new instance. That instance then kicks off a million different processes because somebody told it to do so. And those processes do things like enabling the network to serve up your application, telling the data center guy, hey, you should probably start getting the next part of the data center ready because you're at capacity, things like that. That's orchestration to me, that whole holistic view that allows you to keep growing and not basically forming your own bottlenecks. And then the applications, we all know what those are. The applications that give us our jobs. So this is time to talk about OpenFlow. So I was really pleased to see that a lot of you know what OpenFlow is. So I won't go into the super Rubbermaid view of OpenFlow. What we're talking about here in networking is the basic element of networking is a packet. You have a packet. Packet goes from point A to point B. Now, it's pretty naive to think of it that way if you consider it for a while, because ultimately that packet is part of a connection, probably, HTTP request of some kind to an application. What we refer to those in the networking industry is a flow. And a flow is more than just a packet. It more represents a relationship, right? A web application needs to reach out to a MySQL database a ton. That's a flow. Uses the same IP address, uses the same port. It defines that connection, defines that relationship. That's a flow. And that's kind of what we're talking about when we talk about OpenFlow. Now, OpenFlow is an API, but it's a southbound API. And I have a diagram that makes that a little more clear. Essentially, OpenFlow is our control plane now. We don't need to run OSPF between these two routers, because ultimately what OSPF does is it says, hey, I know about these networks. Router B, now you know about them. Hypersimplified if you know what OSPF is, but you get the point. And that's the control plane to us. Well, if you have a view up here of the entire network, do you really need a protocol to tell the routers each other that information? No, of course you don't. You tell the router, hey, if you see a packet that comes in for this flow that I'm defining in a table, forward it out this port. By the way, you forward it out this port, and you forward it out this port. Sort of an end-to-end holistic view of network forwarding. OpenFlow allows us to do that. And I have a few visual diagrams to make that a little less crazy. Also, I wanted to mention real quick, flows can be installed in a networking device one of two ways, proactively and reactively. Proactively is, I know what all the flows are, I'm just gonna push them out to you, not too complicated. Reactively is more of a discovery kind of thing. So, a packet comes in, I don't have an entry for it, do I drop it? Probably shouldn't do that. Let's forward it up to the controller, make it look at the packet and make a decision. If it comes down with a flow for that packet, we'll forward it. So yeah, we'll incur a little bit of latency for that one packet, but now the flow is in the table. So now we can forward at line rate, right? That's reactive flow instantiation. So different technologies do different things. Reactive is probably gonna be the more common because proactive is kind of hard to do. It's very secure. if you don't allow any more flows than what you've initially put into a router, then yeah, that's pretty secure. But reactive allows you to do, you know, a little more discovery than simple programming in every line. I mean, think of it this way. Let me break it down into a good analogy. If you have a firewall, there's gonna be a permit IP any something, right? Now, hopefully, there's not a permit IP any that allows every piece of traffic, but there are some parts of your network traffic that you want to allow all the time. Well, if you didn't have a flow in your table that allows that particular traffic type, let's say I want to go to Google, Most firewalls don't have an explicit rule that says, you can go to Google. More than likely, it says, if you're inside the inside network and you're crossing the firewall going to the outside, you're permitted. That's typically what that is. So reactive flow instantiation kind of allows us to do that. We say, well, I'm going to put these flows into you that allow you to make your forwarding decisions now. And if you see anything you don't recognize, forward it to me and I'll let you know. That's what reactive is. So this is the diagram that I was talking about. We've talked about the three layers. We've got the application layer, management plane, the control layer. So this is where the controller resides, and then the forwarding plane, or the infrastructure layer. Now this actually, I made this Visio myself just because I wanted it, but this is pretty much directly off of the OpenFlow, or actually the Open Networking Foundation website. So feel free to go there. There's a lot of explanation on OpenFlow. And by the way, if you haven't read the spec is actually pretty readable now. 1.1 was probably not very readable, but OpenFlow 1.3 and onward is okay. It helps you to gain sort of a more detailed understanding of how OpenFlow works. But this is kind of what an OpenFlow topology looks like. We have all of our network elements, our infrastructure layer, and now since we've abstracted that control plane, they're just dumb devices. That's all they are. So now we can write software in our controller, open source software, that allows us to do really cool stuff. For instance, integration with the applications. OpenStack is a perfect example of this. There's many other projects that make that possible. In fact, Big Switch. I just came back from a conference in California where Big Switch did a presentation on some of their new SDN stuff. And most of the vendors that were at that conference actually are using a variation of Open vSwitch because it's easy. The open source community has enabled them to make their products. So that's an interesting paradigm. We'll get back to that part. But this is kind of the infrastructure that you're, or the architecture that you're talking about when you're talking about an OpenFlow-based SDN solution. Now, as I mentioned, OpenFlow works on the concept of flows. We don't identify packets anymore. We identify flows. I know that users will always need to access web application at IP address 1.1.1.1 on port 80. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to recognize on these fields here the type of traffic that is. So IP address and port. You can get pretty granular. In fact, I do have a list of all of the fields, and I won't read it to you because it would take too long. There's several things that you can identify to classify traffic. So we can get really, really granular with the traffic that we're identifying, and more importantly, what to do with them. So OpenFlow allows you to classify the traffic using basically any part of a packet, and then do stuff with it based on that. So that's the step one, classification. Step two is, what do you want to do with the packet? Let's forward it later, but what do you actually want to do with the packet? You want to change some of those fields? Sure, let's do that. Common example that I hate giving out, because I'm an IPv6 fanboy, so I hate saying NAT. But if you could do this, then you could change the IP source header and do a NAT-like function. But it's obviously not limited to that. So that's how OpenFlow works. The third step is obviously forwarding. So at the far end of it, you make a decision on what port to send that traffic out or not. I mean, honestly, you could build a really, really detailed flow entry that says, I want to recognize all these little fields. And if you see a packet with all those fields, drop it. Totally, totally feasible to do that. OK, so Open vSwitch. Now, Open vSwitch is an important project. Who here has heard of Open vSwitch? Really? OK, cool. So Open vSwitch is an interesting project that was originally developed, and you'll have to forgive me, I don't remember all of the members of the original project, but Martin Casado, who invented OpenFlow, hugely involved in Open vSwitch. Ben Pfaff, P-F-A-F-F, definitely want to follow him if you want to keep track of Open vSwitch stuff. Both of them work very, very closely together on Open vSwitch. Now, a vSwitch in general is a construct we talked about earlier, and this is what allows us to connect our virtual machines to the physical realm, right? So it's essentially a virtual switch. I mean, that's really what it is. Because what is a switch? Switch is a physical device. You plug in a port, plug in another port, and it bridges them together on the Ethernet. So you make layer two forwarding decisions. The traditional vSwitch in like ESXi is no different. You make layer two forwarding decisions. There's a few things you can do with policy that allow you to block unknown unicasts or whatever special thing that is. But ultimately, it's just a layer two device, which is fine. I mean, if all we're after is getting our VMs connected to the network, that's perfectly fine. But there's an interesting thing to think about. When it comes to OpenFlow, we're talking about making forwarding decisions based off of any part of a packet. Layer 2 forwarding decisions use one very specific thing, namely the destination MAC address. So why limit our software to only making layer 2 forwarding decisions when we can make a simple change, such as moving to Open vSwitch, that allows us to say, hey, controller, program me with all the flows you want. Those flows can be layer 2, layer 3, layer 4 information, and now I can make a virtual router. I can make a virtual firewall, because it's all being done in software. How hard is that? It's x86, guys. So these are the kind of things that you can do. And Open vSwitch is great for this because it's built to support things like OpenFlow. By the way, VXLAN, if you've kept track of the VMware stuff, it also will very quickly, very soon support VXLAN if it hasn't already. Like I said, I was gone for a week, so RSS feeds took a back burner. And then Open vSwitch, I'd like to mention, Open vSwitch is unique for a very specific reason. And we're going to get to how open source is currently being used in closed source solutions, because it's not just an open source project that you or I would fire up in our home lab, or maybe an open source oriented company would fire it up because they're comfortable doing it. I mean, this is a very high profile project because the big companies are actually using it. It's interesting. It's great to see that, first of all, but there's some interesting things that I'd like to talk about regarding that. So Open vSwitch is really cool. Please download it. It's really fun to play with, even if you're not using OpenFlow. It's a great way to use, you know, KVM and connect virtual machines up. Definitely check that out. Lots of stuff going on with it. I've mentioned OpenStack quite a few times, so I would be interested in kind of elaborating a little bit on what we get. Now, OpenStack, if you haven't heard of it, it's a very rapidly evolving project. I mean, changes are happening all the time. The documentation is great, but the code is actually changing so fast that there are large parts of the documentation that are somewhat out of date. So there's going to come to a point where OpenStack gets us to that plateau where we have all of the feature parity that we need with to compete with solutions like Amazon, things like that. And they'll get there. By the way, OpenStack is really cool if you haven't played with it. A little more complicated to set up than Open vSwitch, but if you can get there, it's worth it because it allows you to do really cool virtual orchestration with your hypervisors. So it's not hypervisor. It's more of a cloud orchestration operating system, if you will. Now, Neutron is important because it's built in a modular fashion, and there's code names for everything. Neutron is the agent, if you will, or the API within OpenStack that allows you to make that leap between I'm instantiating VMs and I'm instantiating virtual network elements or virtual flows or whatever you want to call it, that interoperability between the cloud orchestration software and the network. So OpenFlow is the southbound API, but I would consider Neutron to be more or less the northbound API that allows you to interact with the general, giving my military analogy earlier. And by the way, we're going to get to Open Daylight, but Neutron could plug into something like that. So if you think about it from a tiered perspective, you're looking at Nova, which is the compute portion of OpenStack, telling Neutron, hey, I need a new network or a new virtual router. That instruction gets passed along to Open Daylight, which then pushes the OpenFlow rules down to the actual forwarding devices, such as Open vSwitch, by the way. So Open Daylight's interesting too, because Open Daylight is another open source project. It's a Linux Foundation project. I literally did a Git commit at the airport at 6 a.m. this morning. So Open Daylight is, I've heard this before. This is not my quote, and I wouldn't use this, but it's been called the SDN operating system. I would consider it to be slightly more than that, but the analogy is that it allows you to do all of this SDN OpenFlow stuff in more or less of a usable way. So you've got a controller, but how do you interact with that? Command line? Well, what are you saving? You're centralizing your management again, sort of. So now we need to add a REST API on top of that and build some application intelligence on top of it, because that's what it's all about. So that's what we get with Open Daylight. By the way, Open Daylight is more or less a collaboration of a lot of different networking vendors in the space. We're going to get to their involvement with this, because I'm sure you're all wondering what are closed source vendors doing with this open source project. And there's a good reason for that. I would say that there's a tangible reason for that. But it's a very important project. This, of course, is open source. Like I said, I was working on the code this morning. It's really cool. Download it, play with it. I don't have this in my slides, but if you do want to download Open Daylight to play with it as like an SDN controller, there's another project called MiniNet that allows you to spin up a whole bunch of Open vSwitch instances inside of a virtual machine, and that allows you to basically build a massive SDN topology in your laptop just to play with it. Very, very cool to do that. Okay, so we come to the crux of the matter, and that is the impact of software, open source software on SDN. So why are all the products that I've mentioned having such a huge impact? Because they really are. And I read this article, and I agree with some of the points that they were making, maybe not the whole thing, but definitely read this if you have the chance, because he calls it a very specific point. Facebook, for instance. Facebook is talking about their Open Compute project. And the Open Compute project is more or less Facebook's way of open sourcing the data center, if I may be that generic. So you're talking about open source hardware, open source software, things like that. Facebook is essentially giving us a gift. They're saying, here's this awesome stuff to play with. I mean, I'm not lying. I'd be lying if I said that wasn't really, really cool of them to do. Super excited. If Facebook came out with a Switch and open sourced it, I'd probably buy it. So why are they doing that? Google with Android. Why did Google come out with Android? Android's open source. There's an interesting part of this. And if you talk about things like Android, right, Google open sourced Android, and that's really cool. But ultimately, the play there was obviously to get in the iPhone market. So there's an interesting part of that. I think that Open vSwitch is another example of that, because Open vSwitch allowed VMware to get into the network virtualization market quickly ahead of the leading hardware network vendor, whatever you want to call them, certain five-letter name. And there's some interesting stuff that's happening in the background. So I encourage you to think about that. I don't really have an opinion on that yet, because it is open source. I mean, it's not like it's secretly open source. We can download this stuff. We can change the code. It's definitely open source software. But there's some interesting stuff that's happening in the background. So I encourage you guys to keep track of these projects, keep track of why these vendors are using these products. And more importantly, keep track of how they're using them. There's a lot of vendors that Nuage Networks, they're a small startup in Silicon Valley. I just visited them 2 days ago. They're using Open vSwitch, but they've rewritten their own user agent because they want to do some secret sauce on top of it. Gets them into the market faster, but then they also have the flexibility of something like OpenFlow to do some cool stuff with networking. That particular vendor, by the way, is building on this massive MPLS and BGP infrastructure to make it all work. Very, very nerdy. I have probably a video if you'd like to see it. But that's the kind of stuff that they're doing. They're using this sort of as to eliminate that barrier to entry in the market, but then they're building functionality on top of it, proprietary or not. And in many ways, that works for them. Is that SDN? I would submit that it is. It's not open source fully, but I would submit that it is, because again, it's all about solving that problem. It's about making our networks more agile. It's about bridging silos. It's about accepting the fact that while the networks that we run operationally are fast, I mean, we're using 10 gigabit Ethernet, guys, now 40, now 100. We're not slow, but provisioning a VLAN, that's too hard. So we've got to get over this. We've got to be able to change that concept. I think that's what SDN is promising to do. The next slide is the conclusion slide. I would love to take questions. Sir? Yes? That is the case, actually. OpenFlow is, remember, what we called a southbound API. So we've actually done a great job of standardizing, and there are many people that talk about OpenFlow like it's the devil, but truth be told, it's the only common standard that we have, right? And it does a pretty good job. So OpenFlow is the southbound API that allows us to say, controller, I need you to instruct that data-moving device, which is now all that is, it just moves packets in and out, that you need to add a flow entry that allows you to make a port 1 to port 2 forwarding decision. And that's it. That was the big problem. Think of if we didn't have that. What protocol is out there that allows us to make more or less networking configuration changes on all of our network devices all at once. Multi-vendor. Can anybody name it? It's a four-letter acronym. No. Good call, though. SNMP. How good is SNMP at configuring our networks? No. No, we use SNMP for monitoring, and there's a very good reason for that, because it sucks as a write protocol, right? The vendors have not implemented it in a standardized way. They have screwed up the MIB on each of their platforms in every manner you could probably think of. So it is hugely disruptive to take our networks and dumb them down. I'm not denying that. That's a big change. We're really, really comfortable having the control plane localized into our forwarding devices. Really comfortable. So this is a huge change. I want you guys to understand that. But the cool thing about OpenFlow is it allows us to say, guys, all of that stuff that you've been running is actually a barrier to us moving forward in networking. So here's an OpenFlow API, Southbend API, that dumbs you down. There's a big reason why the leading vendors are sort of pissed. Because essentially what you've done is created a white box switch that allows you to install rules based on intelligence that you define. Yeah, a script. Sir?
Do you know if there's any projects out there like, say, DDWord or any of them trying to support this out of the box?
You know, I don't know. DDWRT is an interesting example because there's certainly the possibility for that. If I may suggest, I mean, if you really, really wanted to, there's probably a way that you could get Open vSwitch installed into a platform like that. Open vSwitch would allow you to do it. Worst case scenario, you know, spin up a small Linux box and install Open vSwitch into it and maybe put a controller on the desk next to it. There's some things you can do with that, but to right now, I don't know of any effort within DDWRT to do that.
OpenWork has, University of Georgia has a version of OpenWork that does support.
Oh, OpenWork? Perfect. Okay, cool. Awesome. So yeah, I mean, that's cool. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that's going to get this discussion started. You know, if you can just play around with it at home, why not? Sweet. In the back.
And I seem to have missed something that says, how do we extend that? I've got thousands of physical machines. Do I put every Windows box, every mainframe, every Linux box into my VMware to be able to switch them? I guess how that scales to the data center and the multi-layer.
Sure. So you mentioned the virtual distributed switch from VMware specifically. Is that what you're asking?
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay.
I'm trying to think of how does that then expand to data centers and firewall layers and thousands of machines as opposed to just being the virtual machines seen within that host?
Okay. The virtual distributed switch, for those that aren't aware, is a way of centralizing the management of all of our vSwitches, essentially. We allow this vCenter instance to have a tab. And we go to that tab and we make network changes, and it's essentially pushed to all of our vSwitches. What that doesn't allow us to do is make those changes on the firewall that's in the next data center. You know, we've got all of our network core equipment in one data center, we've got our hypervisors here. VMware's done a great job of centralizing that management, but that doesn't get us anything in the physical realm. It doesn't allow us to do anything like that. The cool thing about OpenFlow is that we now have Open vSwitch daemons running on a physical box. I can't really go into details, but yesterday, I was blown away. There's a vendor that created a cheap, I mean cheap, 40 gig switch that runs Open vSwitch inside. Completely vanilla Open vSwitch. I mean, really cheap. And these are the kind of things that we're allowed to do. That's a physical device running a vSwitch. And if you can extend that control plane into the physical realm like that, that's what holistic means to me. I mean, think of not just switches. Switches now become firewalls. Huge multi-port 40 gig firewalls. Because now they're making forwarding decisions based on something other than simple layer 2. So to me, the difference between that and what we just talked about is more of a what does it get you in terms of bridging the physical and the virtual. So So good question, though. I mean, like, to be honest, the virtual distributed switch is one of the earliest versions of what we're talking about, because it does a great job of centralizing all those tasks. I remember going into every single ESXi host individually, even inside of vCenter. You still have to click on the host, go to the vSwitch configuration, and make a VLAN change. Nobody wants to do that. Power CLI is great, but come on, let's make it a little simpler than that. So good question. Thank you, Vermin. Anybody else? Sir.
Do you know if there's any like pre-compiled virtual appliances with a lot of this already? If you wanted to just like try out Open vSwitch, or you just gotta build it? Any labs or anywhere to, you know?
To my knowledge, no. I will say Open Daylight is what I would probably use as a controller. And that is ridiculously simple to use. I mean, git clone and then run.sh. That's about all there is to it. In terms of Open vSwitch, Open vSwitch might even have a repository at this point. So you might not have to build it from source, but there's a few things you can do with that. But I don't believe there's a virtual appliance, no. There's probably going to be, if the vendors are going in the direction that I think they're going, things like Viata might support OpenFlow. Might be the Brocade proprietary version, but there's probably a few things that the vendors will do with that. So, I guess more to come. But in my honest opinion, Open Daylight especially is pretty easy to get into. Sir.
I came in late. Sorry, I missed it.
No problem.
Did you mention MiniNet?
I did. Okay. So MiniNet, just to recap, MiniNet is a project that allows you to essentially run many instances of Open vSwitch inside of a virtual machine for testing. So let's say we have the data plane, Open vSwitch. We don't want to build out a whole hypervisor hardware cluster. Let's essentially get a software test kit that allows us to then code the Open Daylight or whatever controller you're talking about, push network changes to it and see the impact. So things like QA and software rapid development. MiniNet's a great example of that. Cool project, especially if you wanted to get into Open Daylight and you want it to be simple. Now that I think about that, sorry about the MiniNet, it's probably the best example of like Open vSwitch getting into that easily. So you get MiniNet spun up, and that allows you to connect all of those to your centralized controller all within your laptop. So I would do that. Thank you. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to take them offline. I'm going to spew some business cards over here. They're not business cards. They have my Twitter and blog on them. So. Feel free to reach out to me or stop me in the hallway and talk about this stuff. And I appreciate you guys coming and listening. Thank you.